listening to another Netcast production brought to you by the Fancy Pants Gangsters at FancyPantsGangsters.com. Because those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet.
After a brief respite on the glittering shores of wherever it is that Netcasts go on vacation, July sees the return of the mighty force for truth and goodness and high-minded movie commentary, the one and only Film Army. This month, Jeff gazes into his crystal ball and looks into the future of movies. Finding nothing, he decides to watch some trailers instead. Lights, camera, and action gazes longingly into the eyes of Letters to Juliet, and Nate comes ever closer to his lifelong goal of poisoning John Travolta, instead just unleashing his box office poison on Battlefield Earth. Finally, Jay, Evan, Jeff, and Courtney take a listener's suggestion and promptly ignore it to talk about nonsensical film plots. It has been said that battle plans do not survive contact with the enemy. To reduce casualties, this month's episode is almost entirely unplanned. Just the kind of humanitarianism you should expect from this, the July 2010 edition of The Film Army.
Hey everyone, Jeff here, with another installment of my series on upcoming film trailers. The rest of the army seems intent on revisiting the past, but I'm fearlessly looking ahead, showing you what I think are the most interesting trailers, and hopefully movies, of next month.
You are going to be a force for good, and a very important sorcerer.
What?
Now did I say interesting? God, I need to stop lying so much. What could be more interesting than a live-action, modernized version of one of Walt Disney's most iconic shorts? And it stars Nicolas Cage? Wait, how long is his hair? Really long? Oof. We're in for a tough one, folks.
Excuse me?
Yeah, we are, Nick. The Sorcerer's Apprentice is the latest in the long partnership between Nicolas Cage and summer movie kingpin Jerry Bruckheimer. This time, they've enlisted their National Treasure co-conspirator, director John Turteltaub. Turteltaub is a family-oriented director who before the National Treasure movies was best known for crap like Cool Runnings and Three Ninjas, but not the one where they kick back, just the regular one. But, I hear all of you saying, Cage is too old and too fucked in the head to be a sorcerer's apprentice. Apprentices are young, like Harry Potter and Luke Skywalker. Who's the apprentice? Don't talk so loud, I'll tell you. It's Jay Baruchel. Yeah, that's about the best I'm going to be able to pronounce it. He's the kid from Undeclared.
2 weeks ago, I was just a normal college kid.
Ugh, so nasally. God, he speaks like he doesn't have a mouth and he can only make sounds by opening and closing his nose holes. Ugh. Who decided this idiot could be a movie star? Oh, Cage did? Yeah, well, that explains a lot. Gonna be the nasal Olympics in here pretty soon.
Every sorcerer needs a nice pair of pointy shoes.
So, I'm not too thrilled about this movie. It seems like Bruckheimer was tasked by Disney at creating another blockbuster franchise based on old material, similar to the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Problem is, Bruckheimer forgot to hire the talent that went into making those movies great. Cage is nowhere near Johnny Depp, Jay Baruchel is not Orlando Bloom, who isn't that great to begin with. John Turteltaub is a small step down from Gore Verbinski, and Alfred Molina as the bad guy is the kind of villainous Englishman you hire when Jeffrey Rush and Bill Nighy aren't available. And it shows in the trailer. Cage and Baruchel look like they're playing their normal character types, and the trailer has to rely on a hit-in-the-balls joke and promises of fancy CG. Not really what I'd call interesting. Avoid The Sorcerer's Apprentice when it opens on July 14th. Well, at least they left the brooms in there. Thank God. I was so gonna get mad about that one.
Dark forces are gathering.
Hello, Balthazar.
It's called Inception.
Now here's a movie for me. Christopher Nolan, coming off my favorite movie of 2008, The Dark Knight, and a man who I believe has yet to make a bad or even average movie. Leonardo DiCaprio, who has proven himself to be a worthy heir to the mantle of De Niro and Nicholson, and a selection of consummate professionals, Nolan regulars like Ken Watanabe, Cillian Murphy, and Michael Caine. We are off to a good start. So, it's a heist movie, and heist movies are one of my favorite plot conventions. I love the idea of the thief who gets pulled back in for one last job. I love watching the heist get planned, the team get assembled, the plan get executed, go wrong, and the team has to adapt and succeed at the end of the day. The twist with this movie is that the heist is happening within someone's mind, and the item they're stealing isn't money or jewels, it's secrets and ideas.
What's the most resilient parasite? An idea.
You don't get a whole lot of plot from the trailers, but I have a feeling plot isn't the reason people are going to go see this movie. The visuals in the trailer are impressive. Since the movie takes place in someone's mind, the idea is that the characters are shaping and interacting with dreams. The key visual in every version of the trailer I've seen is the shot where DiCaprio is standing on a street corner while the surface of the city in the distance is wrapping up on top of itself. It's really cool on a large movie screen.
Dreams feel real while we're in them. It's only when we wake up that we realize something is actually strange.
Other images include some shots of people floating, sleeping while hooked up to some machine, or like people falling down a horizontal hallway like it was vertical. You know, trippy stuff. Other images are centered around water, like images of waves washing up against the shot of a ruined, flooded city, and of water bursting through windows in slow motion. One thing I should say is, don't count on just the visuals in this movie. Expect a good plot with a hefty twist at the end. Outside of the Batman movies, Nolan is known for his third act reveals, and tends to execute them better than most directors. I know I personally was blown away by the twists, multiple twists, at the end of The Prestige, and the moral and plot-wise implications it had on the rest of the movie. So expect some turn like Leonardo DiCaprio being the real target of the heist, or the entire movie being a dream, or you know, some shit like that.
I think I found a way home. And this last job, that's how I get there.
I'll definitely be watching this one. I've been excited for a few months now, ever since I saw that teaser trailer in front of Shutter Island. And I'm glad we only have a few weeks left until the release date on July 16th.
You're the one that we want at the Grease Sing-Along.
God, and I love that opening line. You're the one that we want. I know they've got me now. What can you say about Grease, though? I mean, John Travolta, it was the movie that made him a movie star. And Olivia Newton-John, it was the movie that made her a singing sensation. And... Wait, why am I doing this for a new release segment again? Oh, yeah, because it's a sing-along now. Yeah. You get the little bouncing ball at the bottom of the screen that tells you what the words are. It's kind of cute, you know? And it doesn't seem like that bad of an idea, but the trailer that they made for this one is just awful. I mean, you heard that line at the top. Here's another classic one from this announcer.
It's the original High School Musical.
And the trailer has edited subtitles. They play a part of Grease Lightning, that part, you know, it reigns supreme, the chicks will cream. But in the subtitles it says chicks will scream, even though he clearly on the audio track says chicks will cream. Plus, I know there's a line in that song that says the word shit and rhymes it with tit, so I don't know how, are they gonna censor that too? Actually, I heard that this stuff was just censored for the trailer, but really... This trailer doesn't make me want to see Grease again. It's a good movie and all, but do I really want to see it with a bunch of, like, 14-year-olds singing along? 14-year-olds and their mothers? I mean, I've been in Grease. I was in Grease in high school. I was Roger. I think that was the name, Roger? I don't know. Fuck, I don't know. I was high school. I don't remember that. But anyway, the idea of the sing-along is just so dumb. I'm not the target audience, but, oh well.
GreaseMovie.com and tweet #Grease on Twitter now.
Oh, and Grease the sing-along. The last time I twittered #Grease, I got sued by the McDonald's Corporation, so not gonna do that. So look for Grease the sing-along when it comes out on July 8th. unless you're local to Minneapolis, because I don't think it's playing here then. I just thought it was a funny trailer. Speaking of funny trailers, it doesn't come out next month, but check out the trailer for Step Up 3D. I saw it in front of Clash of the Titans 3D, and it is awesome. And not in a good way. It's absolutely hilarious. It is every cliche about gimmicky 3D wrapped up into one little 3-minute ball of crap, and then a dance movie is just appended onto it, and oh, it's beautiful. Thanks, everybody, and hope you enjoy the rest of the film army here on Fancy Pants Gangsters.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh.
I started off thinking I was going to tell you why the movie Letters to Juliet is enjoyable to the masses, but thought to myself, maybe there's more here. Could these romantically themed movies actually have negative effects on relationships? I mean, Letters to Juliet has a strong romantic theme, but is there harm in having such an overly dramatic themed movie in today's society? Romantic comedies seem harmless, but could they actually be ruining your life? This is precisely the topic of this month's Lights, Cameron, Action. First, let me give you a quick recap of Letters to Juliet for some context. This is your classic romance novel. I mean, it's even set in the Shakespearean love city of Verona, Italy, where the protagonist, Sophie, who's played by Amanda Seyfried, is on her pre-moon with her fiancé. From the beginning, her relationship with her fiancé is doomed for disaster. In fact, basically, he's not even in the movie, and she's left wandering the city herself to explore whatever she wants. Of course, she wanders upon this wall, where people write letters to Juliet, who is obviously of Romeo and Juliet fame. Now, there are actually secretaries of Juliet who write back as Juliet for advice. Now, I don't think there's any spoiler alerts here, because if you've seen the trailer, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. But basically, Sophie stumbles upon this letter that's stuck behind a brick, and it was written 50 years ago by a lady named Claire. Now, she jumps at the chance to write back to Claire, and Claire shows up trying to figure out who wrote the letter. Well, one thing leads to another, and they're sent on a wild goose chase to find Claire's long-lost love. And along for the ride is her grandson, Charlie. Of course, Charlie is the type of guy who doesn't believe in fate, doesn't believe in love, doesn't believe in any of the classic romance themes. And Sophie believes in all of those themes. And I guess one thing leads to another, and you have a happy ending. So, what about this movie could be harmful? Well, I took to the internet for some answers and found that they actually debate this topic a lot on many forums. Basically, what they're trying to debate is whether romance novels or movies are actually harmful in that they create unrealistic expectations. There's a report published by the BBC and several other sites that basically blame romantic comedies for these unrealistic expectations when it comes to love, and they found that fans of these films, such as Runaway Bride, Notting Hill, Romeo and Juliet, just to name a few, often fail to communicate with their partner. Now, it sounds ridiculous, but there's been actual studies that have been conducted. One of them was they took 200 people, and they had 100 of them watch the romantic movie Serendipity, and the other 100 people watched David Lynch drama, presumably Mulholland Drive, but it didn't state. Anyway, the result was that those that watched a chick flick were more likely to believe in fate and destiny. Another study found that fans of romantic comedies actually had a stronger belief in predestined love. One of the ladies that worked on the study, Kimberly Johnson, said that, quote, films capture the excitement of new relationships, but they wrongly suggest that trust and committed love exist from the moment people meet, whereas these are qualities that normally take years to develop. Now, this story and these, I guess these reports have generated hundreds, maybe even thousands of responses. I mean, just from a quick Google search, I was able to find at least 20 sites that had this study posted on a forum and with people responding. Some of the common ones that I found was people just basically saying, yeah, they place unrealistic expectations on one or both partners, but if those partners have little or no foundation for their relationship to begin with, then their shallow attachment kind of looks pale besides the heroics portrayed in the movies. Okay, I guess I agree with that. Another person says, you know, movies, TV shows, and songs of this nature paint such an unrealistic portrayal of the ways that things really work because they are so romanticized. But I guess that reality would be boring for a movie. So what exactly is the problem? What are people getting at? Are they saying that failed relationships are a direct result of people watching movies too much? I mean, it seems like a tough argument to make. One person goes on to maybe paint a little bit more clear picture, and I think that this is probably the best response. They said, these movies are the adult version of the fantasy perpetuated by Disney with its Prince Charming coming to rescue the happily ever afters of Sleeping Beauty and Snow White. What a horrible setup Disney gives girls at such a vulnerable age. Then Hollywood continues it into adolescence with this unrealistic dribble. Girls show up thinking there must be something wrong with them because their boyfriends don't behave like the ones on screen. Somebody responded to that and said, I totally agree. The worst one is Beauty and the Beast, which gives the message that women can actually change men from the proverbial beast into Prince Charming. It's so unrealistic. Now, I would say that movies definitely set an unrealistic precedent for relationships. Personally, I've kind of taken this to heart and kind of try to act like the guys in the movies sometimes, and it has kind of failed me because what actually happens is you end up trying to be somebody that you're not. And I mean, I'm not a relationship expert by any means, but I think in the end, if you're not yourself, at some point the other person has to find out who you really are, and they may or may not like that person. So you might as well just be yourself from the beginning. There's no work involved then, and if it works, it works. If it's not, you know, maybe it's, quote, not meant to be. Is this why people turn to romance movies after they're dumped? While recording this podcast, ironically, I was watching TV, and there was a girl crying because she just got dumped, and she was watching, like, a sappy chick flick, and it was trying to make her feel better when clearly she was not feeling better. So I would caution you to watch these movies for their entertainment value alone. Understand that it's not real life. It's not true to form of what's really supposed to happen, but just that it's meant to be enjoyable. Obviously, they're taken from some forms of truth, but there's not always a knight in shining armor, and that's not how relationships always develop. I mean, they only have an hour and a half to portray a lifetime in some cases. This by no means is going to prevent me from watching these types of movies in the future, but buyer beware. I mean, don't take the lessons of these movies entirely to heart. Until next time, I'm Cameron Close saying, that's a wrap. I'm a seasick sailor on a ship of noise. I got my maps all backwards and my instincts poisoned, and a truth blown gutter full of wasted years. Like blown speakers ringing my ears, always nausea, oh nausea, and we're gone. Attention! This is Terrell, your chief of security. Exterminate all man animals at will, and happy hunting!
Star time.
Welcome to the Box Office Poison DVD feature here on the Film Army Netcast. I'm your host, as always, Nathan Hall. Humanity's last stand against the Cyclo-Aliens is happening in Denver, Colorado. Our future roughly resembles Escape from John Carpenter. The green hog slop us human slaves now fight over out of troughs resembles a mixture of rancid guacamole, cafeteria oatmeal, and Soylent Green. Welcome to the world of Battlefield Earth, a saga of the year 3000.
Do you want lunch?
John Travolta produces and stars as Turl. He resembles a Rastaman pimp who does Shakespeare in the Park on weekends. Or maybe the really annoying brother from another planet. Or, I don't know, an evil bizarro version of Liberace from a very special episode of Xena, Princess Warrior. I honestly can't decide on just one insult. He seriously laughs exactly like Snidely Whiplash. I wish I was making that up. It's also important to note that in real life, Travolta isn't just a poor man's Tom Cruise. Travolta honestly believes he is an operating thetan who can control matter, energy, space, time, form, and even life itself. But not for his vanity projects for some odd reason. How else do you explain him willingly wearing barrettes in every scene? Or the end of Broken Arrow, for that matter. Forrest Whitaker co-stars as bumbling henchman Kerr, looking like a Wookiee with green contacts and moss in his teeth. Perpetually drunk on chartreuse Midori, Whitaker's relationship to Travolta in the film is eerily reminiscent of Pinky and the Brain cartoons. Oh, and I almost forgot. Did I mention that the human hero's name is Johnny Goodboy? Subtle, huh? The part is played by Barry Pepper, who obviously at this time had a major thing for Billy Jack Rawhide pants and Bo Derek braids. And, thanks to the miracle of montage sequences, it only takes Mr. Goodboy roughly 45 minutes to read the Declaration of Independence, pass geometry, master remote controls, fly a plane to the Library of Congress, and hang out in Fort Knox. Not too shabby.
I feel like it's a test that I'm not prepared for. Well, hell, it could even be... Our friendly bartender!
Have to mention the hair. Flowing Charles Manson tresses everywhere. I'm telling you, William Shatner's wig collection has nothing on these guys. Everybody looks like a perfect candidate for knowing where to score some high-grade weed, but only after they tell you the story again that you already heard about the one time that they were an extra on a White Zombie music video. You can only really tell the females apart because they're the only ones who are clean and not wearing leather jock straps and or rubber cod pieces from the Waterworld collection. This film does answer the age-old question, what would it look like exactly if tall leather fetish dudes decided to conquer Earth, rather than just simply form a band or become fluent in Klingon?
But there is one thing that you rat brains weren't smart enough to realize.
The uber-cheesy special effects failed to meet even Sci-Fi Network quality standards. Every action shot is unnecessarily filmed in Matrix Super Slow-Mo, not to mention Planet of the Apes sets on the cheap, and dialogue ripped directly from the pages of Flash Gordon newspaper strips. The alleged hidden subliminal Scientology messages have the opposite of their desired effect, at least on me. This film will discourage anyone, I imagine, from converting, and instead immediately run screaming into the arms of the nearest psychiatrist.
You understand? You understand me?
So many unanswered questions. For example, why would an abandoned 1,000-year-old city not have disappeared by now? How did Earth lose a war in 9 minutes against opponents who have rotten teeth, Peter Tosh wigs, and imitation samurai armor? Why would alien invaders send a group of human slaves to the mountains to mine gold unsupervised with enough downtime to cram for math finals and plot revolution? If jet fighters didn't win the war the first time around with experienced pilots, how is a Dianetic personality test supposedly going to improve the rookie's odds? Do all future Scientologists get gray hair and Easy Rider costumes as part of the benefits package? Why do aliens from the future always insist on packing big clunky drainpipe guns and wearing uncomfortably bulky uniforms from Michael Jackson's military phase? And if aliens supposedly have superior technology to us, why do their slaves schlep gold onto their spaceships with handcarts? Seven Dwarfs style.
Our spy satellites recorded those images.
What is this species?
Well, according to the Klingko historians, the species is called Dog.
Dog.
Yes.
Obviously, the superior race, having the man-animal chauffeur it around.
Yes. Well, dogs did prove to be more cooperative than the man-animals. For some reason, they weren't as useful when it came to manual labor.
In conclusion, I guess this is kind of like Mortal Kombat and Wing Commander got drunk, made a baby, and then hired L. Ron Hubbard to babysit. Everyone's got padded body stockings, plastic body armor, matted hair extensions, Doc Martin platform shoes. In other words, who knew Gwar's fashion sense would eventually become this influential? This truly was the world's most expensive high school play of all time. Tune into the Film Army next month for a review of 2007's I Know Who Killed Me. This is Nathan Hall reminding you that if you don't have box office poison on your iTunes isn't really on.
Welcome, everybody, to the War Room on the Film Army on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Network. This is Jay, and with me is the Pants Commander, Evan.
Hello.
We've also got Courtney from Yeggs in today.
Hey, how's it going?
And last but certainly not least, our regular guy, Jeff.
Rear Admiral.
Rear Admiral.
Give me the respect that I have earned with my...
I will address you by rank.
Yes.
Well, you're not wearing your hat today, so...
Right.
And we can see each other.
We can. Yeah, so I know you're not wearing your hat.
We're doing something new here on the War Room today.
We're at what has been dubbed Pants Tower.
Pants Tower, yes.
Pants Tower. We're in Pants Tower in beautiful downtown Minneapolis. And we're actually all
at the same location.
City
in the Midwest.
Recording together for once instead of doing it over the internet, which is kind of nice.
Decided we wanted to sit on my new plush leather, faux leather couches,
pleather.
I guess. Pleather couches.
Pleather.
How much were the couches? Because I know that you guys spent a bundle on this little area of the room that we're sitting in.
All of the furniture put together is a third of the electronics price.
Oh.
Is this like an algebra problem here?
Do some math.
I think Courtney just doesn't want to expose how much he and his brother actually paid for this.
No,
it looks very nice.
It is very nice.
I think all told, it was all the furniture was under $2,000.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
You make too much damn money.
No.
I've been saying about that about you for years, by the way.
I'm overpaid.
Yeah. No. That I will agree with.
The rug really ties the room together.
It certainly does.
Raise your hand if you saw that coming.
Oh.
Okay. This is the internet.
Those who are not in the room that don't know that we have a rug.
For those of you who don't understand that you're on the internet joke, Jay just tried to give the internet a high five.
Yes.
High five, internet.
I think by the end of our tenure here at Pants Tower, I think everyone will have a comprehensive, detailed image of what your apartment looks like.
We do describe a little bits of pieces of it.
We can describe it to the police when the inevitable happens.
And all of our listeners will as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Walk-in showers, that's all I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have walk-in showers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I haven't befouled your bathroom yet, so
don't let him. He hasn't eaten anything while I've been with him over the last couple hours, but that doesn't mean you're safe.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, I guess do it in Cam's bathroom.
Okay, I can do that.
What are we talking about here today, guys?
We had a letter from a fan.
Oh, boy.
Weirdly enough, his name is actually Cameron. Not the Cameron that's, I'm assuming, washing and touching himself in the back there.
Don't forget to wash after.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, a friend of mine from high school actually emailed me. And he wanted to know what movies really bothered us in terms of just nonsensical plots. Like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't follow the internal logic of the movie. He talks about I think you call it flawed films.
That's good. It uses alliteration.
Yeah.
We'll call this segment flawed films.
Yeah. He's a musician. So, you know, he's a bit of a wordsmith.
There you go.
So I know when we were talking about this before we were recording.
At length. We pretty much blew our load already.
Pretty much, yes.
Might as well just turn off right now.
All over this nice furniture.
Well, not that we have a tower. This stuff takes time to set up. So.
I know. Well, we have all the homeowners associations we got to deal with.
You know, we have to get the required permits to build the fires.
I'm just going to draw attention to your hand. What are you doing right now? Your other one.
not the one that's on your crotch, but the other one.
You mean the one that's twisted around in a 180?
Yeah.
No, the one that was kind of cupping
myself.
It was a saucy pose.
It wasn't even like laying there.
No,
it was
what happened was the way I'm sitting. It's formed this little like lip of my pants, and it just my thumb just naturally just kind of slid right there. So it's more buoyed by the lip in my pants.
So yeah, he's got one hand in his crotch, and the other one looks like a bottle of Captain Morgan. You know, he's got the one.
I am kind of
crotch
Morgan
lip,
right
by
now.
By the way,
yeah,
it's the crotch lip,
the dreaded crotch lip.
Anyway, flawed films.
Yeah. So if we're done talking about
Evan's
my crotch
pants?
For once. I know you. Who are you? You're Courtney. I want to call you Cameron now. We have too many damn Camerons involved.
Yeah, I know.
But Courtney, you had a couple that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and these ones have stuck in my mind ever since I saw them, and they're not recent films, so it's been kind of knocking around my brain for a long time. And they both happen to be Nicolas Cage movies.
And Jerry Bruckheimer movies.
Yeah. Yeah, they do have
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to start with the movie Con Air. This is one of these movies where it just is always, the plot of it starts off, like the beginning of the movie starts off, and this piece of the plot that drives the rest of the movie, that if without this plot piece, none of the rest of the movie makes sense, but the plot piece itself doesn't make sense. So what it is the movie begins with Nicolas Cage as Cameron Poe, another Cameron.
Another fucking Cameron.
He comes home from the war, some war. Yeah, the war. So he's a decorated Marine.
Army Ranger.
Oh, sorry, Army Ranger.
You just pissed off two special forces of the government.
Yeah, come and get me.
And probably Nicolas Cage, too.
Yeah, well, I don't care much about him. But anyway, so
what's he going to do?
So he comes home.
He's got hair.
And his lady works at the bar, and so he comes back to this bar, you know, and it's this great touching scene where he comes home and they have this, you know, great embrace, you know, I can't believe it's been so long, honey, you know, you know it's so great to see you. And so they're sharing a moment, and then there's these townies at the bar.
Fucking
and they just start laying into him for absolutely, like, he's done nothing wrong. He's just come in
Nicolas Cage
to talk to his, you know, to hug his wife after being, you know, overseas for an extended period of time, and they're finally, you know, able to share a meal and a drink together. And these guys are like, "Hey, soldier boy." Like, and they're like throwing stuff at him, and they're just giving him a hard time.
Have you ever seen Con Air?
Yeah,
I don't remember any of that.
Yeah,
Soulja Boy.
Yeah, no,
Soulja Boy was not actually in Con Air.
Oh. Say, hey, Soul, you know, like what you doing there, Soulja Boy? And he's like, "Now, guys, fellas, I don't want to start any trouble." So he offers to buy them their drinks, you know. So he gives them money, and they just toss it back in his face, and they're like,
"Burn."
You know,
with the unpopular wars that are happening in this day and age, I could see that happening. In bars everywhere.
Goddamn liberal townies.
Yes.
First of all, this
no
guy.
No blood for oil.
This guy is a soldier. He's been trained to kill people. And so they're just going to, like, you know, push his buttons for no apparent reason. So, okay. So then finally the bartender steps in and says, "Hey, guys, you know, hit the bricks. You know, you don't have any business, you know, being here." And so they stay the rest of the night, and they close down the bar. And they go outside, and it's always pouring rain in these action movies. And since it's an action movie, there's an oil derrick burning in the background.
Oh,
you
course.
Know, just squelching these flames just coming out of
the
ground.
Guitar.
Yeah, and so these guys have been sitting out there waiting for hours for this guy to come out. And I don't know, like if you're in this posse, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, "Hey, this guy that didn't really do anything to us, we're going to sit out in the pouring rain for hours just so that we can get in a fight with this guy"? It doesn't make sense. So anyway, so the scene continues, and of course, you know, they start a fight with him. Well, of course, his Army Ranger training kicks in, and he ends up like just beating the shit out of this guy. And the guy has a knife for one thing, and he's gonna, you know, splay him. Turns a knife on the guy, and he, you know, kills him. Then it's smash cut to the fucking judge's gavel. Guilty, guilty, manslaughter, 10 years in prison. That was fucking. So he goes to prison on something that is obviously self-defense, and anyone that was at the bar is a witness to that a character witness that, yeah, these guys were antagonizing this, you know, none of that whole, like, it's just not plausible, that whole thing. And the whole reason that Nicolas Cage is even in this movie is because he went to prison, and that was their whole thing. So
they
was like
they needed a reason to get him into prison.
Yeah, but it was
needed,
like,
the guy to be a good guy at the same time.
Yeah, but it was just, our justice system would never do that.
Courtney, John Cusack was using him.
This is true. I mean, if you think about it, obviously whatever war this was, it must have been
1812.
Like, yeah, it must have been some like war against, you know,
very
baby Ghanistan,
war,
where all he did was kill babies. And so clearly no one likes
this. I fell asleep that day in history, I guess.
It's short of toddler stand. Okay. It's just south.
God, there's so many stands around.
There's
area
a lot of
world.
Stands.
No wonder I failed my map test.
Yeah,
in
you should.
Social studies.
You gotta pay attention. Well, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, there was a lot of like loose countries, just miscellaneous. There's a miscellaneous stand actually.
I think
as well.
This conversation is feeding perfectly into the topic of this show. Actually,
just yeah. But all I'm saying is clearly, this war is highly unpopular. So what's to say that the judge doesn't have it out for veterans? You know,
well, I don't know. I'm surprised more veterans in general when seeing the first 10 minutes of this movie where it didn't just get up and leave.
There should have been a fucking uprising.
Yeah, do you really think veterans give a rat's ass what Jerry Bruckheimer has to do? Considering most of his movies are essentially military recruitment films.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's why I joined the army. No, I didn't.
But yeah, so
you have the body for it.
Right. But that scene of Con Air was just the rest of it was ridiculous, but it was all predicated on the fact that he went to jail for essentially a crime he didn't commit, but it was, like, ridiculous.
All right, are you ready for my rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay, here it comes. And it's been a long time since I've seen the movie. I'm surprised I remember it as well as I do. But as I recall, what the judge said, it wasn't just, like, shot from the dude dying to the gavel swinging. There was a lot happening in between there. One of them being, excuse me, the buddies of the guy that just died, they took the knife and they hit it. They picked up the knife that he was trying to splay.
Yeah.
Cameron with.
It was like a butterfly knife or something.
And they took it and they left with it, we can all assume. So between that and what the judge had to say before he dropped the gavel on...
But you have 80 character witnesses. Anyone who was at the bar saw these guys causing trouble, and the bartender would have testified and said, yeah, I kicked these yahoos out.
Yeah, I can imagine you're probably right there. But, I mean, you did skip over a lot of what kind of happened in the movie where, you know, the judge said, you're a trained killer. Your body is considered a deadly weapon, and he threw him. What he actually went to jail for, as I recall it,
but it wasn't unprovoked
assault with a deadly. Well, I'm not saying it was, and I'm I'm certainly not the attorney here, but I mean, as far as movie logic goes, we wouldn't have any of the action movies we had if we went by the very strict logic that, you know, a jury never would have done this or that or whatever. When, you know, we all know that the jury system is flawed, but
OJ,
we're not going to turn this into a
OJ
is
free.
We're not going to. Well, he was. We're not going to turn this into a political show. But
framed by Nick Cage, actually. Not many people know that.
Nick Cage is the real OJ killer.
So what was your other movie?
My other movie is another Nicolas Cage movie, Face Off, and.
But before you go,
yeah,
are you really arguing against the internal logic of a movie that is predicated on the ability for people to share faces?
I'm allowing to throw that out of my factoring of this movie.
I like how you worded that, share faces, by the way.
Yeah,
they were.
Like it's a community bicycle.
Well, here's the thing. And this is the flaw that I'm pointing out isn't the obvious, well, Jesus, this would never, science would never be able to do this.
And they also changed body shapes as
well.
Yeah,
exactly.
Nicolas
Cage and Travolta are not the same body type. Yes.
Yeah, apparently Nicolas Cage switched his body and then just ate cheeseburgers for like a month.
Yeah. Exactly. But what really stuck with me even more than that was the ending of the movie and how everyone decided that they just signed off on the movie saying, oh yeah, it was, you know, like, you know, it's a totally, you know, neatly wrapped up ending of a movie. What happened was, okay, so John Travolta's son was killed in the beginning of the movie by Nicolas Cage.
Well, I don't think his name was Cameron in this one.
No. Caster, I think, was one of the... Caster Troy, Caster I think, was... Troy. Yeah, so it was pretty close to Cameron, but anyway. So yeah, Nicolas Cage kills John Travolta's son through mixing and matching of faces throughout the movie. John Travolta's character ends up killing Nicolas Cage in ultimate justice. Now, Nicolas Cage's son is now orphaned.
Who he didn't know he had throughout most of the movie.
So he didn't know he had this son. And so what they did was John Travolta was like, okay, well, my son died at the hands of this killer. I'm just going to adopt his son to be basically like a neat little replacement. We're just going to adopt him in. What I have a problem with is there's no way in shit that John Travolta and his wife wouldn't look every single day at this kid and just loathe and resent him. Because every day they see the eyes of the man who killed their son.
Maybe that's why they never made a sequel.
Well, yeah, it would be.
Maybe
they murdered their adopted son.
They're going to dig up the dead son and put his face.
I like it.
I think you just improved it.
I think we just made a sequel.
You made it more tolerable.
Anybody that wants to donate to our next film project, Face Off 2, Electric Boogaloo?
It's Face Off 2. Your choices are, because Electric Boogaloo has been retired.
Okay.
I've decreed
it. It's too fucked up.
It's overused.
Yeah.
So your two options are The Legend of Curly's Gold or Back in the Habit. Those are your choices.
Back in the Habit's pretty good.
Yeah. I think those movies came out the same year.
They probably did.
How about... I lost it.
Fun fact, the first movie I ever saw that had people clapping in it was the first Sister Act.
What?
And I remember thinking, these people
what do you
are
mean
insane.
That had people clapping in
you
it?
You mean like
clap during the movie?
Like the audience.
The audience.
Oh, I see.
I thought you meant in the movie.
Like,
no.
The choir. The choir's clapping.
Saw Sesame Street or...
You didn't know what clapping was before yeah, was like, that?
What is this? I was 14 at the time.
My hands make a noise.
My world has expanded.
It's the same noise that happens when I do something else with my hands.
I was only 14. I hadn't figured that out yet.
Yeah. 14.
Speaking of Sister Act, riddled with plot holes and inconsistencies.
Yeah, it's certainly
a flawed film. I think the moral of your two examples there is that the justice system, and by extension the government, has it out for Nicolas Cage.
I think so. And I
because in both of those examples...
Come to the conclusion that Courtney is an anarchist.
It's possible.
I think so.
Well, and then that makes Nicolas Cage's, you know, tax woes in real life make all the more sense. The government hates Nicolas Cage.
Wow, I think this show just kind of got turned on its ear.
Yeah, we're through the looking glass here, people.
He named his son Kal-El?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kal-El, yeah.
What a nerd.
Man's got a Superman fetish.
Well, you know, there's all the National Treasure movies, too. I mean, isn't he essentially
running from... But those are ridiculous movies, anyway.
Well, but, I mean, that's the government, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, okay, yeah.
Like a government... or the
Freemasons.
The Freemasons,
yeah. Yeah, the Illuminati or whatever.
But they control the government. Everybody knows that.
Duh.
Sure.
And the Jews run Hollywood? I got to keep all this straight.
Isn't Harvey Keitel a Jew, so doesn't that... match up? Or is he not a Jew? I don't remember.
Harvey Keitel?
Keitel.
I'm just trying to remember back to piano. I'm trying to remember if he was circumcised.
Say the goddamn words! It's the only Harvey Keitel line I ever remember.
No, really? That was the one?
The Reservoir Dogs?
did you mean the Bad Lieutenant? Or was he naked in the piano too?
No, in the piano. In the piano, you saw the full Keitel.
Yeah, you did.
So you did.
You saw
the
little
Bad
Keitel.
Lieutenant.
Well, true.
Little Harvey.
Little Harvey.
I don't remember the piano. I have to watch. No, I won't have to watch.
Let's not start sucking each other's dicks right just yet, gentlemen.
But he did leave the door open for future sucking of dick.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Anybody else have any little pet peeves? I know we talked about Fight Club a little bit.
My biggest one, and I know I've brought this up on several of the shows before, is the movie The Wizard. Okay.
The video gaming show. Savage.
Fred Savage, Jenny, what's your face from...
Jenny Lewis.
Yeah. Jenny Lewis.
From Rilo Kiley.
From Rilo Kiley. And some little, like, autistic kid that never worked ever again. So they're doing the big. I have two major problems with a wizard.
That Bo Bridges could ever love video games.
Three problems with a wizard.
Hey, this is pretty good.
Well, no, I mean, clearly he had to be. I mean, because in the Bridges family, Jeff is obviously the video game guy.
You would think so.
Because, you know,
Tron, man.
Yeah, Tron. I mean, he was goddamn Tron. So that just makes sense. So they do this cross country thing to get to this Nintendo game tournament.
Yep.
And meanwhile, they meet the bad guy, and his big secret weapon
is the power glove.
Which anyone that has ever used a power glove,
it's no weapon.
It is like trying to play hockey, and they literally cut your legs off with a chainsaw beforehand, and then just put you on a skateboard and just push you out onto the ice.
Evan, tell the story about the time you jerked off with your power glove.
It has good cushioning.
Oh, man.
Good wrist support.
No, wait. No, when the movie came out, was the power glove new or
it
had
was,
it been...
It was brand new. This was part of the marketing.
Had
it been released yet? I don't think it had.
Then it totally makes sense.
It was part of the hype. It was part of the hype.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because everyone would have called bullshit immediately in the theater.
It was terrible. No, it was it was worthless. Like, I mean,
all the kids have been like, that doesn't fucking work.
My power glove doesn't do that.
Yeah, and without going into... more video game stuff. Power Glove was the first real attempt by Nintendo to do motion control, and it sucked
terribly.
It's so bad.
It was terrible. So the thought that that's somehow an advantage, I don't know.
Why was it you can only get a right-handed Power Glove? By the way,
it's because it's Japanese thing.
It's a samurai. Left-handed would have been awesome.
Left-handed babies
done...
are actually killed.
That's Sparta
in Japanese culture. I think
that's Sparta.
Left-handed babies.
Secondborns and lefties. Yep. I think
Yes.
Yeah. And if you're a second-born lefty, they kill you twice.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
They actually throw you off the cliff, run down, scoop you up, and then throw you down the cliff again.
We still have to verify
that. That was unnecessary,
that.
Evan.
Nope. Trust me, after Yags, all
what is your other big concern
my other big concern?
The wizard.
My other big concern.
I understand the child endangerment issues that you have.
It goes back to the main, the final scene where it's the big... the big contest,
Super Mario Bros. 3.
Yeah. Super Mario Bros. 3, which is also where they revealed that.
Yeah, no one had seen it.
No one knew anything about this game. First off, going back to the Power Glove, I know of no tournament that would let you bring an unknown controller, because that's just rife for disqualification. Yeah. So there's that.
It's like steroids.
It is.
Right. Yeah. The Super Street Fighter 4 tournaments are not going to let you bring in your homemade fucking arcade box. So.
But back then they probably wouldn't. But the bigger problem is, so they're doing these tournaments and everything's cool, and they get to the final round and I'm like, hey, we're going to play a new game no one's ever played before.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's freaking out. They're like, how could you do this? It's a new game. Blah 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 blah. And they reveal Super Mario 3, and he's playing it. And while they're playing it,
he knows where the flute is and all.
Jenny
shit.
Lewis yells to the kid, get the warp whistle.
Yeah.
Now, they had seen this game for a grand total of a half hour.
No, it's not in the lexicon yet.
No.
Warp whistle is not, I mean, warp
and
tunnel,
wasn't,
yes.
It wasn't like you could stumble upon the warp whistle either.
Well, no. Okay,
wasn't
okay.
There a warp whistle
which warp
in the
whistle?
One?
Which warp whistle did he get? Did he get the one
the
in,
first one.
In 1-3, or did he get the one in the first castle? Because the one in 1-3, I don't think anybody could figure that out on
no,
their own.
I remember he got that one.
Oh, that's bullshit. Where you got to hold down on the white block?
Like, how'd you figure that out?
Who is going to think of that? The one in the castle, I can at least see someone getting by accident.
Now that I think about it, it might have been the castle, but he was so far ahead of where you have to be to do that. There's no way she would have known that.
Because you can't see the warp whistle in either case.
No, you can't.
There's nothing to go towards.
I was like 12.
Get the warp whistle.
I was like 12 when that came out, and I was like, that's bullshit. Like, right in the theater. It's like, God damn it.
Well, maybe
all the other 12-year-olds were like, yeah, warp whistle.
Maybe it's part of the marketing to get people like, oh, that's what that's called, warp whistle.
You have to watch the movie to know that there's a warp whistle there.
That's what it was. That movie was a giant wet dream for Nintendo. It's like, we can throw $5 million at the shitty film, and people are going to go fucking crazy for it.
They just got to throw the kid from Wonder Years
from Wonder Years in there.
Oh, God. They printed money with that movie.
Oh, I wonder.
I still have
that
movie. I have paid money for that movie on DVD.
Oh,
so,
I have it on DVD.
I have it on DVD.
And I still yell at it every time I see it.
Oh, God.
I haven't seen it.
Bullshit.
I have not seen that movie.
Vindicated.
I got it when it was a new release at the video rental store because back then my parents didn't want to bring us to movie theaters because we couldn't behave ourselves. Anyway, but I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it since then. But I'm able to recall these scenes with great like detail because it was like, oh my god, these are video games. Oh my god, I've never seen Mario 3.
During that movie that you learned how to pay attention.
Maybe.
I've got one, guys.
All right.
So, has anyone seen the movie Untraceable?
Yes.
About, who's, I want to say Ashley
Diane
Judd.
Lane.
Diane Lane.
Yes, okay. Diane Lane.
What and the fuck has Diane Lane been in besides?
Unfaithful.
Besides the, unmovies, apparently.
Neutrogena commercials.
She was in The Perfect Storm.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's something.
She was
it's like
that
whenever
one
they
the
need, whenever they need like a middle-aged hot woman.
She's pretty hot.
And yeah. She's hot.
She is hot.
You ever want to, here's a good movie.
She's hot for like 55 or whatever she is.
Streets of Fire. It's like Diane Lane about 19. Good God. I recommend it.
So anyway, Untraceable is a big sort of fear movie. Fear about the internet. The internet is gonna expose all these evils. You know, people can, the whole conceit of the movie is people vote over the internet for snuff films, for like somebody to die.
Yeah,
Diane Lane is the FBI agent who's trying to trace this guy who's putting on these snuff films.
Who's like a super genius, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. who can, you know, to hide himself
genius.
In the networks.
I bet he podcasts.
So
I bet he does.
I will admit, I have only seen the last about half hour of this movie. The way I saw it was I went to go see There Will Be Blood at like the Maple Grove Theater or something. And I got there about an hour early. I was alone. I hardly ever go to movies alone. But I got there about an hour before this showing of There Will Be Blood. I think it was like a really just off the cuff sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But so I'm killing time. I decide to walk in and see the end of Untraceable because it's like, I'm never going to fucking watch this movie. I'm never going to pay money to see this movie on my own. You know, might as well just kill some time watching it. But at the end of this movie, the thing that always just pissed me off and going like, that's not, I can accept all this sort of the net type stuff where the net is all reaching and, you know, Sandra Bullock is actually hot and, you know, the lies that the net perpetrated.
Hey, you know, speed era Sandra Bullock, I'd take a run at.
Oh, totally.
But the pervasiveness of the internet and that, you know, you can hide people on it and they can read anything on it is.
Sure.
It's blown out of proportion.
Well, it was so brand new back then, but sure. Yeah.
But nowadays it's actually a little more legitimate. So, but the thing that really pissed me off was at the end of the movie that the bad guy hacks into her SUV's like
OnStar
system.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Shuts down the engine of her car.
Well, OnStar
through
can
the
do
OnStar
that.
System.
OnStar can
that's
do that.
True. OnStar can do that.
Well, basically, you're disputing the entire plot of Eagle Eye. I think. With
oh
that.
God, you know, it's funny is when Eagle we first started talking about this, Eagle Eye was the first movie that shot in my head, but I didn't want to bring it up because it's such a stupid movie.
That and Enemy of the State.
Not fair.
Enemy of the State. I like Enemy of the State.
Not fair because Eagle Eye with the bad guy was a computer and
oh spoiler
computer. Fuck that movie, man.
Fuck Shia LaBeouf.
If you go and see that movie and like want to be surprised by the ending, you're a dumbass.
Wasn't
okay?
Julianne Moore the voice of the computer too? Wasn't the voice
I don't
Julianne
know,
Moore?
Man. Eagle Eye looks really good.
Yeah, whereas in Enemy of the State, Seth Green was the one doing all
and Jack Black was
spoiler alert too. Yeah.
No, you see God those guys it. Right away in the movie.
I suppose. What was the one with the time travel? No, that was Denzel Washington, and they had like the secret government time
deja
travel.
Deja vu.
Yes. Okay. Deja vu. I always confuse that and Enemy of the State. It's like big government against a black guy.
It's with black just, people.
I don't know what it is.
I get a lot of Denzel movies mixed up. I was thinking of Man on Fire when you said that.
That works. Well, Enemy of the State was Will Smith.
I think they were both done. Ridley Scott directed them both. So
sounds familiar.
I know. He did.
I
got to
talk into my microphone
State,
better.
So, yeah, you do.
Anything else, boys?
Well, I just want to bring something up here. Does anyone want to guess what the final gross box office of The Wizard was?
$13.6 million.
I'm gonna be a little more generous. I'm gonna say $25 million.
No, this is in 1989 dollars. So we should say
$25 million.
It's probably $10 million. I'll go $10 million.
Jay will win on this one. The final total domestic gross is $14 million. $14.2 million.
Jay wins fucking everything.
Yeah. Opening weekend of $2 million. And that actually put it number 5 for the weekend.
Yeah.
Who won that weekend? Just out of curiosity.
Christ, I'd have to look.
It's 1989. Yeah, that summer was
So that also means I was 8 years old when I yelled bullshit at the screen.
That's bullshit.
The top five.
It's just as believable as if you were 12.
The top five was Christmas Vacation.
Nice.
Oh god. Which had come out the week before, so that was the second week. The War of the Roses. That was its debut week.
I've never seen that.
That was actually a good movie.
Really. Meant to.
Back to the Future 2.
What?
See, Gangbusters. Number three. It's a Gangbuster year.
Yep.
How long had that been out?
3 weeks by that point.
I understand.
Number four. Oh, no. War of the Roses had come out the week before. So.
Okay.
Okay. So, anyway, number four was Little Mermaid.
Wow.
Ooh. Gangbuster year.
And then number five was The Wizard.
Lots of good.
I think Beetlejuice came out that year, too. I mean, there was a lot of, like, big blockbuster sort of
and
comedies and stuff.
here's one of the great travesties. So. At number 12 and 13, so The Wizard is number 5.
Mm.
Also going down this list, Look Who's Talking was at 12.
was in its 15th week.
Gangbuster year, man. That's a year of awesome films.
Okay, hold on. I just had a phone glitch.
Glitch in the Matrix?
Yep. So Look Who's Talking was number 12. Prancer, 13.
Oh, my God.
14 was All Dogs Go to Heaven. So, okay, 15 through 18.
Which was all the kids' movies?
Was it?
What was the release date?
Well, this is Christmas. This is like the week before Christmas. So
you got to get the kids to buy all the Nintendo stuff before Christmas.
15, 16, and 17, after all of those movies. Parenthood.
Oh, yeah. Steve Martin.
Driving Miss Daisy and Glory.
Wow.
Like, Jesus really Christ. Wizard, like, smashed Glory.
Wait, what's Glory?
It's a Civil War movie, Denzel Washington.
I keep thinking of, like, what's the one with the black winner. Swim team? Is that Pride?
Oh, God. Glory is...
that was like...
Yeah, Glory is Denzel Washington.
Matthew Broderick.
And Morgan Freeman.
I avoided
and Matthew
all those
Broderick
movies.
Leads a contingent of black soldiers in the Civil War.
Civil War. Yeah.
Oh,
it was a good movie. I watched it in school.
It was part of the trilogy of Gettysburg and Gods and Generals.
It was.
He shoots, he scores.
Back then, school. I was more about the wizard type movies, and I avoided Civil War movies like the plague.
This is December.
It's usually like most people saw it in school. Everyone I know saw it in school because it was such a big movie.
Yep.
And it was like a long ass movie. It was like 3.5 hours, too.
It
was one of those things where you get breaking.
I probably napped through
it.
So in 1989, in December, how old would you have been? Mr. Courtney.
I would have been... Oh, I would have my birthday, so that was 8 years... No. 7 years.
What year were you born?
Math. Yeah, we'll do the math for you.
7 years old.
Plus, it's the end of the year, so you really don't have to figure birthday into it very much.
7 years old.
You would have been 7? Okay. Yeah.
I was 11.
You're old?
Fuck.
Well, I would have turned 9 3 days after the movie came out, so...
Yeah, this is going to make it... I would have been 5... At the time.
Jay and I will be killing ourselves on the way home.
Yep, we're going to drive right off that fucking Third Avenue bridge, man.
Yeah.
Terrible. I think we're going to wrap it up from here, kids.
I think so, too.
That was kind of a fun show, though.
Yeah,
first time all together in one room.
I think this
turned out a lot better than Yegg's yesterday. We're learning about Pants Tower.
That's right. Way to learn.
Pants Tower is what we call a unique acoustic situation.
It really is.
It's a neural net processor. It's a learning computer.
We're trying to convince.
Well, if you really want to talk plot holes, don't bring Terminator into it, because we'll do another like 45 minutes.
How can Kyle Reese fight alongside John Connor and... Concurrently, be his father.
I'm turning off his microphone right now because he will go on.
I'm going to blow a gasket.
That's all we got for this week. So, I would like to thank Jeff. Thanks for coming on again. Courtney, not only Yegg's fame, but also the Flyover Ska Show, which is a good show. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Evan, as always, thanks for stopping in.
Thank you.
And until next time, the War Room is closed.
July has more National Independence Days than any other month of the year. Celebrate it by watching an independent film this week. And of course, support your independent film netcasts like the one you just heard. And be sure to watch those independent films on our sponsor, Netflix. You can get a free 2-week subscription just by going to bit.ly/fpjflicks. If you'd like to join the film army, be sure to check out our forums for more information. If you don't want to join, well, we didn't want you anyway. But we still want you to check out our Facebook page and Twitter account at twitter.com/filmarmyfpg. Until next time, brave listeners, good luck, Godspeed, and keep watching movies.
Oh, Grease Lightning, you burn up a quarter mile.
Grease Lightning, go, Grease Lightning.
Go, Grease Lightning, you burn up a quarter mile.